your source for everything paranormal. Para-X. The views expressed and the opinions given by the individual host and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of Para-X, its affiliates, or its sponsors.
Bright the cheeks and warm the heart, but tread the circle thrice about to keep unwelcome spirits out. Bide within the law you must, in perfect love and perfect trust. Mind the threefold laws you should, three times bad and three times good. These eight words the reed fulfill, and ye harm none, do what ye will.
Welcome to Stirring the Cauldron. Now, here's your host, Marla Brooks.
Merry meet everybody and welcome. I've got a really interesting show for you tonight. My guest is Lisa O'Hara, and she has a BS degree in business administration from San Jose University in California, where she lived until 2011. She's worked for many years in law firms and then went on to work for engineering companies in Silicon Valley and also in a Department of Defense company that had ties to SRI. She's now enjoying retirement, and since retiring, she discovered that she was a psychic medium, and that knowledge was the catalyst for many discoveries about herself, one of which was that she was an ET abductee. And after reading Terry Lovelace's book, Incident in Devil's Den, she wrote to him, and he encouraged her to write her own book detailing her ET experiences as an abductee. And our good friend Dinah Roseberry suggested to her to get in touch with me so she can share her story with all of us. Her book is called Abducted and Furious. And if those of you in chat have any questions for Lisa as we go along, send me a private message. And anyone who'd like to join us, please come over to paraxradionetwork.com. Lisa, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
It's going to be really interesting. I'm, you know, having read the book, I know it's going to be interesting. But let's start, because there's a lot of things to cover. But when you first got in touch with me, you said that your reason for wanting to be on the show was to reach out to other abductees who needed help and hope, that most abductees like you hide in the shadows and suffer in silence, but you found some tools to work to fight back, and you want to share them. So let's kind of start at the beginning. When did this all happen? When did it all start for you?
The abductee stuff started around 2017, but the mediumship started around 2016. So I just started, you know, trying to figure out what I was. I knew I was intuitive. I knew I was an empath. I couldn't figure out quite what I was, like what was my label. And I had a lot of experiences when I was young that were one-offs, where I had one thing happen but not another thing. You know, like for instance, I would have a dream that would come true. But I didn't, you know, I didn't try to make something come true, and I just went to sleep, and the next day I had a dream and it came true. So there were times where I just had no idea where these things were coming from and what was going on. And at some point I just wished I could figure out what I was, because there was no way to say, oh, I'm a psychic, because I had one dream that came true and I didn't know how to turn it off. I didn't know how to turn it on. There was just there's no manual when you're not having, you know, the same experiences as everyone else. You don't want to tell people. You just want to keep it to yourself and hope you can figure it out, or hope it'll happen again and you can find a label, but you have no idea what's going on. So there were quite a few experiences like that when I was younger. One thing that kept happening to me, but at weird intervals, was that I would have a daydream at night, and it would go on every night for about a week, and then it would come true. That happened to me when I was 10 years old, And then it happened again when I was 16. I started having this weird daydream that I was going to move to a foreign country. And I didn't want that because I was just about to enter my senior year of high school in the same school. And I moved around a lot as a kid, so I was praying that that wasn't going to happen. But it did. I had the daydream, and then I moved to a foreign country and spent my senior year in high school. And again, you know, another, you know, one-off with years in between doesn't give you any idea of what you are or what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, what finally opened your eyes? When did you get the label stamped on your forehead?
Right around the time when I started getting messages. I got a message from my mother that was for a sister, and then I got a message from my grandmother that was about my father. And the messages were kind of cryptic, you know? Mm-hmm. They were like, you know, you need to, your father is the way he is because of me. Like, okay, well, you were his mother, so okay, thanks a lot for that. But only to find out that he was, when I visited him, he was going to blow up and, you know, be very childish. And then it made sense, right? So mm-hmm. That was one of the things. And I happened to go to a medium to find out about my mother who had just been deceased. And she said, you're just like me, you're a medium. So, and it turned out that she actually did mentorship. So at that point, I thought, well, okay, if I'm a medium, I should, you know, investigate this, try to figure out what to do and how to do it and how to turn it on, how to turn it off, how to connect, how to protect myself. And at that point, that's what I started doing. And I did that for a while.
And that kind of led to your realization about being an abductee?
Yes, it did. It was funny, and I don't know, maybe, I don't know if I'm normal or not, but one of the things that I noticed was that while I was working on this to be a medium, I started seeing myself as a medium and having clients, and then that started sort of to fade, and then I felt like I was moving in another direction, and I didn't know what that meant. The medium said, you know, you can continue in this direction or you can go farther. And I thought, well, okay, the mediumship at this point doesn't quite feel right to me anymore, whereas it did before. So I'm just going to go, you know, in the unknown direction. And so I did. And that's how I found out I was meditating and I was talking to my spirit guides. And they told me, you're an abductee. I was meditating. I felt this very, very negative presence in my room. And all of a sudden I said, what in the heck? What is that? And they said, oh, it's the ETs. They're here to take you. And you're an abductee. That's how I found out. And it was very scary.
It would be. But, you know, you mentioned that you found out that when you were psychic, that opened your eyes to many things, and it was kind of, you know, later in life or whatever. But the question that immediately popped into my head was, do you think people who have developed their psychic abilities are more prone to being abductees, or have you thought perhaps there's just what the profile is for the type of people that get abducted? Is there one?
I don't know, actually, but I have thought about it, and I do think that the contact with ETs make you more psychic, actually, and that you wouldn't normally be psychic, or you might not be, if you hadn't been abducted.
Okay, yeah, because, you know, a lot of people, when we really grab our gift and start to use it, we're very much open to different things, you know.
Right.
The world isn't black and white anymore, it's gray, and there's so many possibilities, so I thought maybe that would be easy for someone to get into your head, you know, in a matter
yes.
of speaking.
I agree, and I don't know which one came first, that I was already psychic and that I just didn't know it, or if my contact with them made me more psychic. I don't know. It's a good question, and I have thought about it, but it's just, I have so many questions, I don't have a lot of answers about this stuff.
In the metaphysical world, you know, that's how it goes in any respect. Like you said, cryptic messages from the other side. Never, you know, you don't get a whole answer all the time. And a lot of the time we're not supposed to know these things anyway. Whatever we're looking for, we'll find out later. But right. Not now. So, yeah, it's all kind of, you know, all mixed up there. So how did you find out who your abductors were?
I really worked on it. I started reading a lot of different books on other abductees. Actually, I read Terry Lovelace's book, The Incident at Devil's Den, and I found very many similarities. And one of the funny things that happened while I was reading his book, and apparently this is common because I've talked to other people, but you start seeing ghosts. And I saw quite a few ghosts while I was reading his book. But I just felt, you know, it was very good to know what his experience was. But then also I read a lot of books on, I read Whitley Strieber's Communion book. I reread it, I think, from reading it prior. And I was able to realize for myself that there was something called screen memories. And screen memories are how your mind protects you from your experiences. And so if you're having trauma, it protects you by giving you like a commonplace dream. In my life, I realized that for myself, that when I had a stress dream, for me, you know, that was walking down the street naked, not having any clothes on, losing my wallet, you know, couldn't find my car in a parking lot. Mm-hmm. All of those things are, to me, mean that I was stressed. And so when I started realizing that that was a screen memory and it wasn't created by someone else, it was created by me, I then started to really look at that and what that meant to me. And so I wanted to look behind the screen memory and find out what was happening to me prior to me getting that screen memory. And that really pushed me forward and finding out what was happening to me. And I got a lot of, you know, this is sort of like a big giant puzzle. And, you know, you start to get the edges and then you try to fill in things. And I also wrote everything down. I have a journal and I would write down every dream I had. And then I would look behind it using some of these tools. And basically what I was doing is I was remote viewing my own mind. And I was looking for what was behind the screen memory. And that way I could piece together what was happening to me when I was asleep. And, you know, that's how it went. And I worked at it for a while. And then, I told people about it. And then they wanted me to write a book. I wasn't so sure I wanted to write a book, but I did.
So I think you were talking about the Greys, basically, mm-hmm. and the mantises?
Yes.
Mantises, that's a tongue tie. Were all the people that were, all the beings that you were being abducted by, were they all malevolent or were they some benevolent? The more you got to think about it, you were treated well or you were treated badly or whatever, you know what I mean?
Yeah. They were actually all malevolent, the ones that, there was one group, it was sort of like a, it was like a human shape or a, you know, bipedal shape of being that looked kind of like human. They were blue and glowing, and they did help me. They did pull something out of my arm. Now, I don't know if they were actually putting something into my arm, and it seemed like they were taking it out. I'm not sure. But the rest of them were all seemed to be trying to do something, do me harm. Torture me in some way, take out my eyeball, squeeze them, you know, that kind of thing. So suck out my eggs, just stuff like that. And there were actually, you know, mantis, but there were also a lot of spiders in my case.
Oh, I didn't know there were spiders. This is good. but okay. So why do you think you were chosen?
I actually think that that is a... that is a word that people use, and I think, and maybe the ETs use it for them too, also to say that they were chosen. Mm-hmm. But I don't really believe in that because I think that they want us to feel good and that they're doing this for their altruism. You know, they're helping us in some way. but mm-hmm. I really think they have their own agenda, and I don't know what it is. And I don't know how I got picked, but I think chosen seems like a better, like a nicer word. Like it seems like you were special. But I actually think they just pick everyone. I actually think a lot of people are actually ET abductees, but they just don't know it. And I don't know why I found out, but I believe that that is the case. A lot more people than they think there are.
Yeah, well, one of the things that you mentioned in the book, why you were chosen, was had to do with soul contracts. So you want to talk about soul contracts, please?
Sure, I will talk about it. I was told that by my medium. Well, while I was working on this, I actually spent quite a bit of time with a medium trying to work out how to get rid of this situation, because I really wasn't very happy finding out that I was being abducted against my will. And so we tried a bunch of different things. But she wanted to go to the Akashic Records, and she wanted to remove soul contracts. And we did a lot of healings and trying to change the soul contracts. And she was of the opinion that soul contracts existed because we chose this life. Mm-hmm. And we chose these experiences. And that because I was complaining about it, I was just being a victim. But the truth is, I really didn't want it. And so I actually, after a while, didn't believe that there was a soul contract. Or if there was, I didn't think I could break it. Because we tried everything. Everything she could think of, we tried it. And I even used to read off a manifesto, as my husband called it, every night to protect myself and to keep myself from being taken. Demanded my right to free will. I told them I was a sovereign being, and I chose not to leave. It happened anyway. So I wish we could have broken the soul contracts, but I couldn't break them. So that was what was going on there.
Okay, and also you were talking about that you were abducted several times a night. That seems excessive, and were they the same beings bringing you up and then sending you back down several times, or were there different beings, one after the other? It's kind of mind-boggling.
It is, and I think it's because they could change your time zone or your time. they can bend time in some way that, is not obvious to us. But yes, I think I was abducted multiple times a night, and sometimes by the mantis. And I actually got to see a couple of mantises. And sometimes shorter beings would show up for me. And then other times it was people. So I really think that I am a military abductee as well. And that military groups want me for whatever reason, some sort of either torture or experimentation, like guinea pig status. Mm-hmm. Or it could be, and I can't remember a lot of the stuff because they wipe our memory. They seem to want to know about the ETs, but, they've wiped our memory. So there's nothing there to tell them. So I find it, kind of hard to believe that they keep trying to get information out of us when obviously we wouldn't remember it.
Yeah, and that's interesting. You brought up the military because I got a question from chat saying, did your family or parents have a military background since you moved around a lot? And the other part of the question was, do you know your blood type? Because this person said that she's done a little bit of research here and there, and it still brings her to those two things, but she's not convinced with either. So yeah, let's talk about that.
Sure. My dad was in the military initially, but not before I was born. So before I was born, but not after I was born. Mm-hmm. So he was in the army, and it's interesting because I have a lot of dreams or screen memories about military, either Army or Navy. And my family, my father's side, a lot of them were either in the Army or the Navy. Mm-hmm. Yes, I do know my blood type. It's A positive, and so I don't know if that goes with your theory.
And I've had like Nick Redford on talking about aliens and things, and I think it was B negative that kind of, you know, like some of us are in his way, we're part alien, you know, we've been mixed up in the batch.
Wow.
I think it was B negative, if I'm not mistaken, but I could be mistaken. But it was really interesting, you know, because I asked him if he knew his blood type. And he said no, but I think he did. He just didn't want to say it. That's kind of what had happened. So so you really don't remember. I mean, there are some abductees who say that they remember everything when they got up in the mothership and what was going on and all that stuff. And you don't recall much of that?
What happens is, it's interesting now, I was on another show with a guy from a couple of guys from MUFON who wrote a book. Mm-hmm. And I was telling him, yeah, I don't feel when I get abducted, what happens is they just knock me out. And he was saying that it was probably because I was troublesome. So because I'm troublesome, you know, they don't bother with, me. They just knock me out. And I go to sleep immediately, and I cannot wake up. I know what's going to happen because a ET or someone comes by and hits me with this, what I call a sleep dart, which it feels like a mosquito bite, like that little tiny pinch you get. Mm-hmm. And then I know sleep is coming very quickly, and I can't stop it.
So you can't, when you feel that, you can't fight it because it will just overtake you anyway?
I have fought it in the past, and they'll keep hitting me with it. But eventually, you know, I succumb. So, I mean, you know, I tried different things because, you know, I'm an experimenter. And so I would, fight it as long as I could, end up staying up, you know, until I only had 2 hours of sleep, and I'm not 20 anymore, so I couldn't function the next day, you know.
I feel that, yes.
Yeah. And then there are other times when, you know, I fought it as long as I could, but then I would eventually succumb. And then other times I just went to sleep right away because, A, I was tired and I stayed up too late the day before. Or I just thought, you know, this is my chance because I can then remember all the stuff that happened before. And then I can look at my screen memories later and pick up some more clues. Because that's what it's all about. The only way you can fight this is know what we're fighting against. And the only way to do that is to figure out what's really happening. And so I just started really writing down and documenting all the clues that I knew prior to abduction and then after abduction. And I tried to, you know, use as much data as possible.
Mm-hmm. Another question from chat. Do you have any particular scars that you can't explain?
I do. I have quite a few of them. They're all mostly on my arms, and I do have a scoop mark. I recently found it on my leg, on my right leg. The rest are all just unusual, where it looks like I've just been, you know, I don't know, just
pinched,
weird dots.
Smacked.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Black and blue, little things like that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I have a lot of those. The bruises are really weird. So a lot of them seem to have, like, syringe marks in the middle of them. I had one that I think I sent it to you in my files, but there was one that had SP. It looked like syringe marks poked in my skin, so it said SP or JP. I wasn't sure. And just a lot of really weird things like that. I also have like stun gun marks. I finally, ouch, for myself, you know, they have those two prongs. And mm-hmm. I started realizing that I would see those all over my body, on the front of my body, the back, my arms. And at first I thought that it was a square or a triangle, depending on where those little holes were.
Mm-hmm.
And I finally thought, oh my gosh, this is a stun gun. I mean, in the very, very beginning, I thought it was a spider bite. Because, mm-hmm. you know, spiders bite in twos.
Yes.
And so I saw that, and then I kept finding them. And then I thought, I can't be bitten by spiders all night.
You wouldn't think so.
There aren't that many spiders in my bed. So when I found the square, I had seen that on some other websites of being marks from ETs. And then I also sometimes got a triangle. And I'm not really sure what that is, but I determined for myself that it was like stun gun marks. Mm-hmm. So I guess maybe if I was starting to wake up, they stun gunned me, or maybe that's part of their protocol for abduction. I'm not sure.
Shame on you for being, difficult.
I know. I'm kind of proud of that, actually.
Yeah. Well, we should be. Another question from the chat room. Do you have children? And if so, have they had bouts of this as well?
No, I do not have any children. And, I used to think it was just because of my chaotic childhood. But now I'm not so sure. I mean, I really think that the ETs use our children, that if we have them, against us, kind of like as emotional blackmail. And they've used that on me for my husband a couple of times where they say, well, if you don't do this, we're going to kill Bob. It's like, okay, go ahead. That's his journey. I mean, that's what I say. And I know that sounds harsh, but I don't want to be held to something I'm doing just because of their manipulation. And yes, Bob's still here. He hasn't died. So,
well, that's good. Glad to hear it. I mean, sometimes people just say things that they don't mean just to scare other people.
Yeah, exactly. And it's emotional blackmail. It's a way of controlling you.
Yeah. And you're the problem child.
Yes, apparently I am.
Which, there are merits to that also. I was going to ask you something and it just flew out of my head. All right, well, let me get one a short question because we're going to take a break in a couple of 4 minutes or something. I was asked, why would the military be abducting people? For what purpose?
I actually think it's for human experimentation. I mean, at first I, thought that it was about the ETs, but I think that the ETs and the military are actually working together in some way. And they're, experimenting on us. We're, without our consent. Hmm. So, and I think if you had a father who was in the military, then they feel like it's their right. Who knows? It could have been in the contract. I mean, when my dad, who wasn't my dad at that time, signed,
Mm-hmm. That could be. And all right, there's something I was going to ask you about, and people are talking sort of about it in chat room now. I was going to ask you what the significance of the black triangle was that you were seeing. And in the chat room, they're talking about triangular shape patterns mean very bad experiments somebody saw a guest on a Canadian radio show that had a prong and triangular pattern. So what was the black triangle that you saw?
I actually saw a black rectangle, and that to me meant my memory was wiped. I used to see that when I was 28, I started having night terrors and sleepwalking incidents. Mm-hmm. And I was married to another guy at that time. Mm-hmm. And whenever he walked into the bedroom, if I'd fallen asleep first, I would wake up screaming. And I would scream like I was being killed. That's what he said. And I never remembered it. I was not awake when that happened. And all I could remember when I thought back was a black rectangle. And so I went to therapy, tried to figure out what that was. I never could. Then when we separated, I started sleepwalking, and I was always waking up, finding myself talking to someone in the closet. I wasn't quite sure at that time what was going on, but I just had no way of finding out, because that was like in 1989 or, 1992. And these kind of things aren't talked about. So I, just didn't even know what that was. But I, kept it in my mind because, again, another weird thing that happened to me, which I couldn't explain. So when these things started happening, I did start having the black rectangle again. And then I was able to put the two and two together and then try to look at it, try to find out what it was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, everything's really so complex about this, and at the same time, you know, interesting and whatever. And so I think right now we're going to take a break and let everybody think about what we've been talking about so far, because there's a whole lot more to come and I've got a whole lot more questions. So everybody, you know, look under the bed, be careful, you know, look and don't make sure you don't have any bruises or anything. And we will be back in 2 minutes.
Stirring the Cauldron will be right back. So don't go away.
If you end up with webbed feet,
remember, you've been warned. Missed an episode of Stirring the Cauldron? Then be sure to check out MarlaBrooks.com and check out the archive. And while you're there, check out Marla's weekly Witch's Oracle card reading. Explore the site to find many great resources, such as information on tarot, oracle readings, metaphysical consultations, and links to all of Marla's books. That's MarlaBrooks.com.
Throughout time, events have occurred that have shaped human history. Spirit voices from the past have many stories to tell, and for the past several years, channelers Barry and Connie Strom have been conducting live channeling sessions and relaying those stories and messages from those on the other side. We invite you to tune in to Barry and Connie's new show, Channeling History, on the Para-X Radio Network, every Sunday night at 9 p.m. Eastern, as they relay the messages of those voices from the past, the ones who have witnessed history firsthand, and those who have made history themselves.
Hey everyone, it's Marla. If you like tonight's episode of Stirring the Cauldron and the archive podcast as well, take a look at the show's YouTube channel and check out the dozens of shows that are there just waiting to be heard. New shows are added each week, and while you're there, why not subscribe? It's free. And if you click on that tiny little bell icon at the top of the page, you'll be notified when new shows are available. Just go to youtube.com and then type in Stirring the Cauldron Para X, and the link will appear. Just like magic.
Welcome back to Stirring the Cauldron. Once again, here's your host, Marla Brooks.
My guest tonight is Lisa O'Hara, and we're talking about her book, Abducted and Furious. So, Lisa, when you kind of started putting two and two together and they decided that somebody suggested that you write a book, you were talking in the book about maybe getting in trouble for talking, for teaching people how to fight it and all that. Did you realize that it might be that way, that you might really get in trouble somehow? I don't know what kind of punishment, but, you know, were you a little bit worried about that when you started writing the book? You there, Lisa?
Oh, sorry. Yes. Sorry.
Okay. That's all right. Did you hear the question? Yeah.
Yes, I did.
Okay.
It turns out that I wasn't afraid because I had had scary dreams. You know, I had had my eyes poked where I would see that if the glare of a car hit my eye, I would see all these poke marks. And when I went to my medium, she said, oh, yeah, you had... They poked your eyes with long needles, and it must be a punishment. They're trying to tell you something. And so I just thought, you know what? You know, that I've had that to happen, and I've had other things happening, but I just, I don't really care. Because I wake up every morning, and I'm still here, and it's worth it to me to help other people. Because the problem is there's just not a lot of information about what you can do. And if you try the information that other people say to do, it didn't work for me. Mm-hmm. And so I felt like I had to write this book, because if I didn't, I wouldn't, other people wouldn't have the opportunity to try it themselves to see if it worked for them. And what I found was kind of obscure, and I was very motivated. So I just thought, I need to write this book because other people can choose if they want to fight it or not. And if they don't have a book, they don't have, you know, the opportunity to learn it. I did try to teach other people, but it's really hard. It was really hard for me to find other people that had negative ET experiences. A lot of people had positive ET experiences, and they could not relate to me, and I couldn't find a lot of people who had ET experiences at all, much less negative ET experiences. So I thought, if I write a book, then those people can, who are out there that I can't find, can read the book and help themselves.
Yeah, because like you said before, a lot of people don't want to admit that things like that are happening. So right. If there's a book out there, they can be incognito and go ahead and get it. So when did you realize that you could fight back and stop the abductions?
It took a while. I didn't leave any stone unturned. So I actually tried every single thing I could come up with and my psychic medium could think of. And so I actually took healing classes and because, you know, I was just trying everything. And so I took an angelic healing class and one called La Ho Chi, and I felt really good about it. And I felt good because after an abduction, then I could use these healing modalities on myself and I could feel better and I could sleep. Because one of the things I found was that I could not sleep after abduction. I'd wake up at like 4:04 and I'd be awake for a while and I couldn't sleep. But if I used La Ho Chi on myself, which is in my book, it really helps. So I started doing that. And that's actually one of the things that I started doing that led me to other healing books. And that led me to where I found some tools to actually work against them. And then also I had La Ho Chi. So that's how it happened.
Yeah, it's probably a very long process. And then just this popped into my head. So if people get your book, maybe just out of curiosity, you know, because it's an interesting topic, might they realize that they might be abductees as well?
Yes, I'm sorry if that happens to you, but yes, they might find out they are, you know, if they are, now they have tools to fight back. if they aren't, then they can just, you know, learn a healing modality and, you know, do hands-on healing on themselves.
Well, there were a couple of things in there. I mean, because you talk a lot about remote viewing, that they are remote viewing us all the time. You know, well, a lot of people do. The military does. I know I have friends who do. And, you know, I just kind of want to put the blinds on them sometimes. But what does remote healing have to do with all this? I mean, how important is it to them or to us or what?
The remote viewing is good for people who are, you know, just trying to expand their mind. I mean, actually, that's what I thought. I took a couple of remote viewing classes from different instructors. And it's just a way of, you know, opening up your mind to other possibilities. I mean, that's why I liked remote viewing. But yeah, we are being remote viewed. We are being watched, monitored. You know, I actually believe that a lot of remote viewers, not the good ones that are just going to a target, but, you know, ET remote viewers are actually giving us diseases and, you know, stuff like that. I mean, we're their experiment. So, but I do think it's important to know that this exists because a lot of people have no idea that there are invisible people walking around. They can walk through your doors. I mean, nothing is safe. Nothing is secret. Nothing is sacred with remote viewers because they will just walk through your walls. They can get into your important papers. They know all your passwords. I mean, you know, so if you don't know that that really exists, then it's important. It's like important for your psyche to know that this exists and just to be able to watch for it.
Well, do you think people should always kind of have that wall in general to kind of block that out? I mean, some people do that just to block out negativity, but would you suggest?
I actually don't think that you can block out the remote viewers. I mean, but I do think you can using these tools that I found. I mean, there are things you can do because I believe that there's a lot of ETs use mind control, and they actually use programming of your mind a lot of times. Mm-hmm. So that's how they can maybe get you to see things that aren't there, that kind of thing. And it sort of distorts the story so that you it's harder for you to determine what's true and what isn't. And actually, the tools that I found are able help you to take that away. So, you know, it's just a way of clarifying things.
Well, one of the tools, I think, is a very, very simple tool, and that's the word Yahweh. I mean, why do you think they're afraid of that word?
I don't know. I wish I knew. I don't know if it's because it's one of the oldest words in the world or if it's, you know, a powerful being. I don't know. But that really works for me, and it really helped, and it seemed to clear out all the negativity. In the book, I have a, you know, this actually happened to me where I woke up, and as a disclaimer, I have dry eye. I have dry eye in one eye. And I woke up and I couldn't see out of either eye, and I was really upset about it. And I tried different things. I tried I had to find the artificial tears package, which wasn't easy, and then open it and then put it in my eyes, and that didn't help. And I wandered around my house, you know, sort of pacing, thinking, oh my gosh, this is going to change my life. I'm a dancer, and I can't dance, and I can't drive, and what else can I do? I mean, that's what was happening. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, it popped into my head that I could say Yahweh, and, you know, I had nothing to lose. And so I said Yahweh, and then it seemed like it got a little better. So I tried it some more, and I sang it a little bit. And eventually, my eyes got better and better and better, and then I could see. So it was really a strange experience. But after that happened, I thought, I'm going to use this all the time. I'm going to use it and see how far I can take this. And I did.
Yeah. You also mentioned ultimate protection. And you explained that in the book. And you also explained that you should never say it out loud. But in general terms, what kind of ultimate protection should someone use? I mean, you know, all of us have certain protections that we do, you know, whether it's a white light or whatever. But is this something different, the ultimate protection?
Well, actually, yeah, it comes from a book by Stuart Swerdlow, and he has something called ultimate protection. And it's basically a violet tetrahedron and a violet octahedron. And you put it over your body, and that helps protect you. And, you know, he also uses white light and a violet bubble, you know. So that's what it is for. And it's just to protect you while you're trying to beat off the aliens.
Yeah. Now, one thing, too, that some people are going to shake their heads about a little bit is that a lot of people that are listening in suggest that we do work in our highest and best good. And you believe that isn't a good thing, is it?
I don't, because I don't believe that we, you know, we ask, please give me what's in my highest and best good. And so basically, I feel that we're giving our power away to whoever we're asking for the highest and best good. And I believe that we should not use that phrase, because we're actually giving away our power rather than gaining it.
Okay, that makes some sense. I did talk to Dinah yesterday a little while about the book and stuff, because I know she was into it. And I mentioned the cancellation tool, and she just jumped up and said, oh, my God, that worked for me. I mean, she was just, you know, like, oh, my God, that was the first thing that did. So, you know, in the book, I mean, there are listings of books, tools that need to be used. You've got an outline on how to use tools. There are a lot of tools that will help anyone who, you know, is unhappy to find out that they might be abductees and stuff. So I want to talk about tools, but let's talk about the cancellation tool, because she said that was the first thing she tried, and it was amazing how well it worked for her.
Yes. Again, these aren't my tools. I got them from Stuart Swerdlow, and he was an abductee and a Montauk boy. I just wanted people to, and I got these from a book called Healing Tools, and it's in there too. So I listed him. I credited him. Mm-hmm. I just started using them for ETs specifically, and it really worked. But basically, the Brown X tool is basically, I now Brown X out all unnecessary negativity. I now Brown X out blank, fill in the blank, according to the wishes of my oversoul and God mind. And when you say that, you are taking out things out of your journey that's unnecessary negativity. And it really works. And I feel like I don't want the ETs in my life. And so I'm basically using that as a tool to eradicate them. And so there's also, you know, you also can think the Brown X. It's a specific color. Apparently, it's important that you know what the color is. And you use that on when you're looking behind your screen memories to actually put that on the ETs. And when you do that, they disappear.
Let's talk about screen memories for a minute, because we were talking about them earlier. But I mean, can everybody have them, know them, recognize them, make them happen?
I believe so. And see, I think that what happens is our dreams are our screen memories. I mean, I believe dreams are our memories. And so sometimes there's actually something behind them. And so when I look behind my dreams, that's when I find the ETs. So that's what I determined. Now, when I have a stress dream, which is where I'm not saying, oh, the bicycle is me and the sky is me and the, you know, when I have a stress dream, I think of it as that's when I'm being tortured. So I look behind it to see if that, what I see there. And then I write it all down so that I can have a puzzle piece for my giant puzzle. And not all of these things make sense initially, but you want to gain a story from what happened and what's going on. And the only way to do that is to look behind the screen memory, the dream, the memory.
So I guess you just have to know what to look for before you can get creative and do what you need to do.
Not necessarily. I think you can look behind every dream and see what's there. Now, if there's nothing there, then there's nothing there. That was actually a dream. Mm-hmm. If there's something there, then that's, you know, part of your puzzle.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, what's interesting and to read is several chapters are about your experiences, like in 2017, 2018, 2019. You said, you keep all of those written down. You've got the journal. And so it's kind of like learn from you, you know, because everything is like written down. I don't know if it's easy or hard to keep a journal. You know, sometimes people are just, oh, God damn, I'm going to write this down and it's so easy and I'm going to remember this and whatever. And other people go, oh, what a pain. You know, I mean, yeah. They just don't want to do it. So, you know, that's a feature of the book that really can let people understand kind of word by word, step by step, what's going on with that and what you felt and what you did. And so this all kind of ended in 2019, sort of?
No. Oh. I mean, it continued on. It was just that I needed to get the book out. That's what my spirit guides told me to do. But yeah, I'm pretty much done now. And, you know, it's been, you know, I just had one more group that I had to remove from my life, and I did. And I just needed to get it out. And I actually say that in the back of the book that I'm not done. But it's just, you know, I just needed to get the book out as quickly as possible. That's how I felt. So I did that.
Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, it really is important. As you said, you know, one of the chapters called Learn From Me. and don't give up, and let's help each other. You know, before we get too carried away, why don't you tell people where they can find you in case somebody that's listening now wants to get in touch with you?
Okay, yeah, they can email me at abductedandfurious@yahoo.com. I'm also on Facebook. I have an Abducted and Furious page. as well as a Abducted and Furious with Lisa O'Hara group. It's under the page. And then also you can find my book at on Amazon. I'm in Kindle and also in paperback. So
good. There's just a lot of ways. And, you know, you also talk about people's experiences differ from yours, but is there a general kind of thing that everybody, even though some of the experiences are different, there's still some similarities?
Not that I found. I found that they're very different, and also because we're so different, you know, we mm-hmm. how we process information, and, you know, I don't know. It just seems like there is just everything under the sun. And I also think that that's like by design, because that way it's hard to compare notes.
Well, yeah, that's true, too. So you say things are continuing. I mean, there's more going on. But so you're not totally rid of them?
Yeah, I mean,
are
am
you?
Now.
You are. Okay.
I am, but not. I wasn't at the end of the book.
Okay.
Because I just had, you know, I had to get the book out. And I just, you know, I don't. As much as I actually didn't want to put my journal in there, but my spirit guides really wanted me to. And I think they just wanted people to know everything I did and how I did it. And also it can be interesting to know what's going on in somebody else's life. You know, and it's like a snapshot. Actually, when I read my book, because I actually read my book every time I have an interview, mm-hmm. and it's because now that I have different experiences, mm-hmm. a lot of that stuff all changes, you know, because there were a lot of things I didn't know. And now I know a lot more. And because of that, because I have the snapshot of my life in a book, mm-hmm. I can read it and say, oh, now I know what that means. Now I know what that means. I mean, so it's good to have. That's why it's good to have a journal. It is hard to write it all down. Mm-hmm. And initially, I didn't know what data was important. So I wrote a mm-hmm. lot data than I needed, probably. But I just needed to know what was going on. And also, I just wanted to write down all the clues so I could try to figure it out. And that's why it's good.
Okay, so yeah, and you do have a chapter on noticing the clues. So what are some of the clues?
For me, it was there were my clothes smelled. And, you know, looking back, it took me an absurdly long time to figure this out. But when you're first having these weird problems, you don't know what the actual outcome will be. And it's your last thought that you're an ET abductee. So, you know, I noticed my clothes had this funky smell. And then I thought, well, maybe, you know, I didn't use enough laundry detergent. And then it went on and on for a really long time. And then finally, I realized that I'm leaving in these clothes. And they smell like BO and feet, because my environment that I'm going to smells like BO and feet. And so, you know, so that was a clue. And then, you know, how I felt. Did I feel the sleep dart? You know, what time did the sleep dart hit? Were there helicopters going over my house? What time did they do that? You know, that kind of thing. So I just mm-hmm. wanted to write down all the clues so that I had sort of some sort of framework for other clues.
Mm-hmm. And I popped into my head, I just remembered about pyramids. Let's talk about pyramids. How functional are they for us?
Oh, they're very good. Actually, you can get healings under pyramids. Mm-hmm. Actually, it's interesting. When in 2004, I kept looking up at the sky and I'd see triangles everywhere. Not just stars, but triangles. And I thought that was strange, but I didn't know what it meant. And I still don't, but I just started reading about pyramids, how if you create one and sit under it, you can do healings, you can do meditation. And so that's what I started doing. I started meditating under a copper pyramid, and I, you know, found that it was like a funnel to your head. So I did it a lot. And so that's what I do. And I actually built mine using a split ring, 4 copper pipes from the hardware store, and a speaker wire. And I have instructions on how to make your own copper pyramid in my book.
Yes, you do. And let's talk a little bit about rocks and crystals. How are they helpful?
Rocks and crystals are just good for you. They're good for grounding. They're good for clearing. You can carry them around in your pockets. I mean, everybody I know is a rock hound. it seems.
Yes.
And they all have their crystals in their pockets. They're wearing their necklaces with giant rocks on them. And so they're just really helpful to make you feel better. So that's what I use them. And they also can open up your intuition, different ones, different rocks.
Yeah. We're a group here that loves rocks and crystals and uses them all the time.
Right.
All right. One more thing that came to mind. You were talking, one of the chapters is abductors are mimics. What kind of mimics? What are they mimicking?
They're mimicking emotions. So it's my belief that abductors are narcissists and they don't have any emotions. And so basically they're mimicking our emotions. They're making us feel like they're good, they're trustworthy, they're motherly. You know, I had an encounter with a praying mantis that made me feel that she was very motherly. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she was an abductor. So, you know, you got to wonder what exactly is going on there. And so, I mean, I had my medium telling me, you have to feel them. You have to feel them. And I couldn't feel anything because there's nothing there. I could only feel neutrality, actually. Mm-hmm. And so I think that people, when they say, oh, they love us and they want what's best for us, I mean, are they manipulating you so that you feel that way? I mean, what's going on there? So that's what I think. I think they mimic their emotions and they project them onto us. And yeah. So we feel comfortable with them and we let our guard down.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, there's black and white, good and bad. And so I'm thinking there's benevolent ones and malevolent ones, you know, but you just never know. And every time you talk about a praying mantis, you know, I would hate to get one angry because it'd eat your head off like they do.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, and that's one of the other things that you talk about and is fear in the book. So, yeah, it all comes together. And I mean, they're really, like I said, way too many things that we can't get to, too many different subjects and topics to get in a short hour. But I mean, it really is an interesting book. It's really interesting, you know, when you're talking about it now. And so since time is bending, to use a phrase, we've got to go. So one more time, give everybody where they can find you and their books.
You could find me on Amazon, Abducted and Furious, How I Fought Back and How You Can Too. My email is abductedandfurious@yahoo.com. And you can find me on Facebook, Abducted and Furious.
All right. Thank you so much for joining us tonight and sharing. And I'm hoping that's going to be helpful for a lot of people that, you know, might be able to step out of the closet and get some help, right?
Yeah, I hope so, too. I hope it helps someone.
Yes. And I want to thank everybody in the chat room and all the listeners, wherever you're listening from. And until next time, everybody, blessed be and merry meet again. Good night.
This has been another edition of Stirring the Cauldron with Marla Brooks. Be sure to tune in next week at the same time for another great guest and more fun. Any rebroadcast or other use of this program without permission is strictly prohibited. Copyright 2009.
You have been listening to the Para-X Radio Network.